Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. My name is Amy Wheeler, and I will be your host today. This is a solo episode inspired by the Polyvagal Institute. I have the good fortune of working for the Polyvagal Institute, and they have an Introduction to Polyvagal Theory course that runs several times per year. And I am so blessed to be what's called a pod leader. And what that means is that there's the larger course where hundreds of people are kind of listening to the lecture and asking questions and studying together. But then they also have pods that are kind of breaking off into 8 to 10 people where you have your own little group that moves through together where you can have discussions and you have your own place on the app that you can work with each other. And so this morning at 6 o'clock a.m., which is the time that my pod goes, because I have the international pod, meaning that people all over the world are joining us. I had such an amazing discussion with our group, and I wanted to share some parts of it with you because I think it's profound. And I think so many of us are finding that we have a very similar situation. We have a very similar human experience that we have come to and figured this out on our own over time. But once we found things like yoga or polyvagal theory, there was an aha moment to say, oh, this is the human experience. Hundreds of millions of people have felt this over all of time and space. I am not alone. It is part of being human. And so I just wanted to share some of the gems from my pod this morning, because I just saw little light bulbs going off for myself and for the attendees in the group. And I want to assure you that you are okay. You are a human that is having this very challenging experience here on earth, full of suffering, that your mind and your body and your nervous system are working the way that they're intended to work, which is to let you know when there's a threat, either real or perceived, to try to keep you safe, if possible, from that real or perceived threat. And basically, your body knows. It doesn't lie to you. You can trust your body. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We hope that you're enjoying this podcast each and every week. In addition to this podcast, Marlisa Sullivan and myself, Amy Wheeler, we are hosting a group inside the Polyvagal Institute. It's a free group where you can learn about yoga, yoga therapy, and polyvagal theory. We'd love to have you come on over there too to enjoy some of that free content. And I'll put the link in the show notes so that you can get over there easily. I recently had someone who told me that they had made a decision and they didn't know why, but it just didn't feel right. And they tried to work through it and they felt like, oh, maybe this is just my past trauma coming up and maybe this isn't really a problem. Maybe I shouldn't trust my body, which wasn't allowing that person to sleep and was making them feel anxious and contracted and tight. And so they came to me and they said, I don't know if I've made the right decision. I'm not feeling well. My body is giving me these signals and I can't tell if that is perceived threat or real threat. And I said, it doesn't matter. Listen to your body. Your body knows. Over time, when your body feels safe, you will have discernment. Your prefrontal cortex that makes decisions and is logical and rational, it will be able to come online and think through these things. But we can never get to that top-down processing where the brain is telling the body how to function and yes, it's safe and it's okay and you can do this. We can't get there until we listen to our bodies and allow our bodies to feel safe. And so in my opinion, with my friend that was going through this challenging decision, I said, it doesn't matter if it's the right decision or the wrong decision. Your job right now is to listen to your body and to help your body and your nervous system feel safe. And through that process, eventually things will get digested and your body will be able to trust itself. You will trust your body, your mind, and your body will be more connected. And then we can talk about thinking our way through these things. Now, the downside to that, I think people think is, oh, am I just going to shrivel up and be a hermit and miss all the opportunities and I'll never get where I'm going because I'm too scared and I'm too shy and my nervous system is too overloaded. I don't actually worry about that because in my 30 years of experience of working with people, I have not yet seen that happen. What I have seen happen is that people get clarity. They over time realize, oh, this is the lifestyle I need to have structured. This is the way that I function best. I need a slower life. I need more space. I need more time. I can't push too many things into my day or I don't feel well. Getting clarity about that is a good thing. That doesn't mean you're fearful or you're too shy or you're unable to do things. That's just the reality of how some of our nervous systems and minds work, and that it is crucial that we provide our nervous systems with that kind of safety and nourishment, and we don't overload ourselves. So if you come to that place after you've basically convinced your body over time that it's safe, it's okay, we can move into the world and live our life purpose, if you've already done that work and then you still find yourself shy or not getting yourself out there as much as your society might tell you you're supposed to, I would say that's not a problem. That's discernment. You know yourself, you know your body, you know what you need to keep yourself safe and to nourish yourself. And through that discernment, you don't have to have any guilt or shame about being a quieter person or an introverted person or a neurodivergent person. That's good that you discovered that. And on the flip side, I found a lot of people that are not those things. They're not introverted. They're not neurodivergent. They just needed to feel safe. They needed to come home to self. They needed their nervous system to feel safe from the bottom up, from the body up, giving those messages to the brain saying, hey, it's pretty good down here. We're okay. That when that happens, sometimes people blossom and they do come out of their shell and they do feel comfortable sharing who they are with the world and they do start going for opportunities. I'm thinking of one of my very special students who came in so shy. And after about 2.5 years of training, like it is so beautiful to see her out there in the world doing her thing, getting jobs, being a bright light. And it makes me smile to see how creating that sense of safety and nourishment for her own nervous system over a period of time really showed her who she really is. And that she can get out there in the world and shine brightly. So neither one is better than the other, the introverts or the extroverts, the people who need a little more time to nourish themselves and recover from social interactions versus the people who actually get energized by getting out there in the world. The whole point is to make ourselves feel safe enough in our nervous system so that we can find out who we really are and what we need and how to function. And therefore, how do I need to structure my life? And I think this is a big part of what we are doing as yoga teachers and yoga therapists. Whether you knew it or not, that's what you're helping people to do. Whew, so let's take a breath there and take that in. Maybe you even need to rewind what I've just said and listen to that part again, because I think that is a big deal that you don't have to worry about if you're making the right decision or the wrong decision. Your first and primary goal is to make your nervous system and your mind feel safe. And whatever happens from there will be a good thing. Those decisions, that discernment, knowing who you are, why you're here, and what you need to do in the world, it will all become very clear if you can accept yourself as you are. So that's number one. Number two, and this is where the pod experience this morning with the Polyvagal Institute came in, that when we talk about top-down processing versus bottom-up processing, a lot of us break that down to the vagus nerve, and that is a big part of it, but there's many other physiological systems in the body that are also incorporated into top-down versus bottom-up. And let me just break down those concepts for a minute so that we're all on the same page with our language. So from the top down means that you are able to work from your prefrontal cortex. You're able to work from the newest part of your brain that is thinking, rationalizing, that is logical, that is organized, that says, here's the sequence of things we need to do. Here's the order we need to do them in. Here's the priorities. Here's how I need to structure my day. All of that is top down. Also, what is considered top down is that when we experience the stress response or the fight or flight response, or even the shutdown response where we just turn into comatose, to be able to think your way through, oh my gosh, I'm having an anxiety attack, or, oh goodness, this is not a good situation. I need to get out of here. Many times when we're in those threatening situations, whether it's a true threat or perceived threat, doesn't actually matter at this moment. When we perceive threat, number one, we are allowed to get out of that situation. And we don't have to have that argument in our head. Is this a real threat? Am I overreacting? It doesn't matter. At this point, your body and your nervous system feel threatened. So accept that. I don't feel well in this moment. I can excuse myself to go for a walk. I can go out to the car and grab my whatever I think I need to grab and take that time. I can go to the restroom. I can leave the party. I can, you know, there's a variety of things that we can do to remove ourselves. Because as long as we're in this threat response, we don't have access to top-down processing. We don't have access to thinking our way through this. So that's number one. Do you need to remove yourself? And how can you keep yourself safe and feel better until you can do stage two, which is to nourish yourself, to get your nervous system and your mind back online so that you can think your way through it. I think so many of us are guilty of being in this anxiety response or panic attack response and shaming ourselves. Like, why couldn't I think my way through that? Why couldn't I make a good decision? Why did I lose my words? Why did I say the wrong words? Well, because your prefrontal cortex is completely offline. You know, it's not convenient. I'm not saying that being in a job interview and losing your words is a good thing. I'm just saying this is your nervous system trying to protect you and trying to survive, full stop. And so we just have to accept that for some of us, that's how our nervous systems function. And no amount of pushing ourselves and overloading ourselves is going to change that. We have to maybe remove ourselves until we can feel enough safety to bring the top-down processing back online. Now, that is 20% of the data that's moving between your brain and your body. Only 20% is from top down. That's for higher cognitive thinking. 80% is convincing your body that it is safe so that your body sends messages up through your spinal cord and to your brain saying, actually, we're okay down here. The digestion is working well. The heart rate is working well. Circulation is working well. All systems are online. Body feels okay. So our real work in these moments when we think we have to make a cognitive decision, usually we don't have to, and we can't, in fact. The real work is, how do I bring my body back online? Priority number one. And I have some suggestions, and this is what we talked about in our pod. Number one, can you go walking? Can you start to move your body? Can you jump or hop in place? Can you do tapping, EFT, right? Emotional freedom technique, tapping into your body. I'm patting myself in different places. What that's doing is sending sensory input to your body so that eventually it can go up and tell your brain you're safe. In EFT or tapping, they'll add affirmations or thoughts And so in that instance, you're tapping your body like, okay, body, you're safe, you're here, you're alive, you're surviving. And I'm thinking very positive, happy thoughts. So you're doing both the bottom up and the top down, right? So I think EFT is an amazing technique for that reason, that it's actually hitting it from both directions. But you can go walking, you can go dancing. I love the idea of putting on like drum beat music and just moving your feet right, left, right, left, right, left, and moving your arms, mobilizing. When we mobilize our body to music, to a beat, we get back into the body. We tell the body it's safe. Our bodies remember these ancient indigenous cultures. This is programmed into our DNA to be co-regulating with our people and to hear music and to move to that music together. Even though you may be doing it all alone in your living room, there is some deeper part of you that has a remembrance. I don't know if you know this, but there are 4,000 people throughout all of time and history that contributed to your DNA, your grandparents and their grandparents and their grandparents. If you go all the way back, there's 4,000 people, more than 4,000, that contributed to your DNA. And a lot of their trauma, a lot of their joys, a lot of their ways of coping, and the way that those 4,000 people's nervous system and mind functioned in this world have come through you and are coded on your DNA. So you can go back to that. You can go tap into that. I come from Northern Europe, and I remember the first time that I watched something, I think it was called The Vikings on Netflix. There was another one that I can't remember the name of, but I had a visceral response in my body to that show. I heard of the Vikings and I knew I probably was a Viking. Like cognitively, I was like, oh yeah, I come from Viking stock. It's always a joke. But when I watched that show, the Ragnar show, that was the first one, I had this visceral response in a cellular way to watching those Vikings move on that show. It was crazy. And that's what I'm talking about. This is programmed into our nervous system. So whatever your heritage is, if you know your heritage, like what did your people do to co-regulate, to self-soothe, to bring their bodies back online? Another one for me is cold plunging, even though some people say it could be really bad for your heart. For me, that immediately brings me back online. Other ways that help to bring my body online is I have a little mini trampoline in my office that if I get really stressed out or in shutdown, I just try to jump on my trampoline and bring my body back online. I can't think my way through this. I have to move my body. Sometimes if I'm really stressed out and shut down, I'm too exhausted to move or to mobilize. And that's problematic because the thing that would bring my body back online and let it know that it's safe and tell my brain that it's safe and give that 80% data input from the bottom up, the thing that could make the biggest difference for me, I can't do because I'm too shut down and too exhausted. And it takes energy to go on a walk. It takes energy to go swimming. It takes energy to put the drum beat on and do the dancing or whatever it is that I would like to do. So sometimes I have to do something that's much more passive to bring my body online. And so I've discovered vibration plate. Some of you have seen me talk about this before. You can get them on Amazon.com. They're not super cheap. But in an emergency, if you tend to be someone who has a lot of fight or flight or shutdown and you're exhausted, so you can't actually mobilize yourself, you can stand on something like a vibration plate and bring those soothing sensations of vibration into your feet, up your legs, up to your hips, up to your spinal cord, up to your brain. And usually like a 10-minute session of standing on some type of vibratory plate, it can completely bring me back into my body so that I'm not disembodied and shut down. It's like, okay, we are here. We are alive. We are safe. If you think about it, like when a little mouse gets captured by a cat, it goes floppy and it can't move. It's just something the nervous system does to try to survive. And after some time, if the cat gets bored and walks away, the mouse will get up if it's still alive and it will shake off and it will be a little disoriented, but then it will eventually run off into, you know, the forest or wherever it wants to go. That's how I picture this vibration plate or even the jumping trampoline. It's that shaking off of, oh my gosh, I am still alive. The perceived threat or the real threat didn't take me out. And now I need to do something to move my body and let my nervous system know that we survived this attack. Again, real or perceived, it doesn't matter. If your nervous system is going into serious fight or flight or shutdown, you need to mobilize from the bottom up, from the body up. And it's really interesting. I heard someone in the Polyvagal Institute say this, and this is not a critique of PVI. It's just to say it's such a new theory that there is still a lot of room for expansion and growth and development and evolution of the theory and the practical application. But so far in these decades that Stephen Porges and team have been working with polyvagal theory, they have outlined the theory and they have a lot of top-down strategies regarding social engagement and things that we can do, the vagal nerve stimulator and the listening to the music, and that we've had a lot of things that are a little bit more top-down. And the room for growth and expansion in the future with polyvagal theory is to research and find all the bottom-up strategies, all the way we can feel our bodies again and convince ourselves that we are safe from the body, to tell the brain, oh, you're okay, to tell the nervous system, you made it, you survived. Okay, let's get you back online. Let's go for that walk. Let's jump on that trampoline. Let's get on that vibration plate. I think this is another reason even things like massage work so beautifully, because that, again, is a passive way to become re-embodied. You don't have to do anything but lie there on the table. So if you're really shut down, you know, you may think of regular massage as a luxury. And of course, many of us cannot afford it, even though we would love it. It's just not in the budget. I do understand that. I'm one of those people. But if you can afford it, I wouldn't think that massage has to be a luxury. It could be your weekly or bi-monthly way that you bring your body back online and you help your body feel safe. And that might be the most important way to spend some of that income that, you know, could go out to a few nice dinners or get you the more expensive iPhone or have you shopping at the thrift shop versus the regular stores. Are there any other ways you could cut back on those expenses to really invest in your own body and your own nervous system and work that bottom-up programming to help you know that you are safe, you have survived the threat? The optimal state has a very unique opportunity for yoga teachers and yoga therapists who would like to do case studies with a group of colleagues and receive continuing education credits. Several times per year, we have groups that come together to do mental health case studies and physical health case studies, where we take time to go over the biomedical, the intake, you get into breakout rooms and discuss it with your colleagues. Then we come back and have you turn in homework that we will grade and get back to you and let you know if we agree with your reasoning or if maybe there's a place for us to give you some feedback. And then we'll come back and show you what our teachers from the Krishnamacharya Yoga Mandram have come up with as a solution to that case study. It's a wonderful group. We usually have about 15 to 20 colleagues coming together. It's the perfect way to get your continuing education credits, and we'd love to have you join us. So if you want more information, contact us at www.theoptimalstate.com, and we'll be sure to give you the information about how you can join our next group. So this is a lot of what we were talking about this morning in my pod, or our pod, I should say. And then we got into a discussion about neurodivergence and how people who have neurodivergence, could be autism, could be ADHD, could be ADHD, which is a combination of those two, could be things like dyslexia. They're even starting to put some autoimmune diseases into this category, or things like POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia, something like that. I would even say that it could apply to people who have like a lot of shingles outbreaks or herpes outbreaks. Not that those are connected to neurodivergence, but I'm just saying a variety of physical health concerns are very connected to your nervous system and your nervous system feeling overloaded. And so we were talking about how to basically provide space for your nervous system to digest and unpack the events of the day and structuring our lives in a way that can work for us, which is a real challenge when it comes to sustainability and providing for ourselves financially. How can we find that balance between I can pay my bills and yet I'm not overloading my nervous system all day, every day at an 8-hour job where I have to be in contact with too many people and I can't digest and process all of this, right? So a lot of people who are highly sensitive and have nervous systems that take in a lot of data, they can't work full-time at a 9-to-5 job in a regular setting. They need to be self-employed. They need to work part-time. And again, this is a challenge for sustaining ourselves and providing for ourselves financially. But getting back to my point I was trying to make, we were talking about neurodivergence and how people who are neurodivergent oftentimes are collecting more sensory data input, up to 40% more than the non-neurodivergent person, what we would call an allistic person. So what that means is they can walk in a room and you might call it, they can have a vibe check. But really what's happening is their nervous system is sensing if it's safe in that room and collecting more data than the allistic nervous system. Now, how does it do this? We call it neuroception, that they can feel if there's safety, but it's also neurodivergent people oftentimes have great pattern recognition. They can see things before anybody else sees them coming. They can feel things that nobody else has felt yet. They're very closely connected to self. They're attuned to their own body. So the reason that they're feeling overwhelmed or maybe having shutdown or maybe even having a little temper tantrum is because they are so connected to self, they can't ignore those internal body signals like everybody else. They can't be dishonest with themselves. They are listening deeply to what is going on inside, and therefore they can't lie and pretend it's something else. They can't walk into the party and override their nervous system and say, well, we are going to stay because I might have a chance to make some good connections here. The neurodivergent person is like, the vibe isn't vibing here and my nervous system doesn't like it here and I'm out. They prioritize, whether it's conscious or unconscious, they prioritize self-care and listening to their own body over other values. And I find that interesting. When I say they're taking in up to 40% more data, what that means is that they can see how the muscles of the eyes are working in the person they're in conversation with. And they know what that means when the one eyebrow goes up. Consciously or unconsciously, they're collecting data. They can see when what's coming out of someone's mouth is not actually matching up with the sensation they're feeling from that person as they try to co-regulate. The person might be saying really nice things. I'd like to help you. You seem like a nice person. Let's get together sometime. But the neurodivergent person can feel in their body that this person is never going to call me. They are actually full of BS. They're just trying to be polite. And the neurodivergent person listens to that instead of overriding it with some cognitive story. So I call being neurodivergent a superpower because there's a built-in BS detector that they or we know when things aren't adding up. And there's a value around honesty, authenticity, and saying what's real. Now, this can get people into trouble, neurodivergent people into big trouble, because we are the vibe checkers. We are the honesty protectors. We are the ones willing to say, hey, your words and what I'm feeling aren't matching up. I don't believe you. You're being duplicitous. Or like that will come out of our mouths and it's unpleasant. It's not, and I put this in air quotes, socially acceptable. But I'm going to argue that neurodivergent people actually are living examples of polyvagal theory, because that bottom up processing is so strong and there's such a deep connection to self that cannot be ignored, that maybe the rest of us or you, holistic people, non-neurodivergent people, can override with that top-down processing. Whereas somebody might say, I value getting this job and I have to stay at this party to network to hopefully meet somebody who's powerful that can help get me in the door. The non-neurodivergent person can top-down process and override and turn off any ability that the nervous system has to communicate. Like, nope, we are not listening to your nervous system. Go away. You're not being helpful. I don't want your honesty. I don't want your communication right now. Please shut that down. They can do that and they can get places. I would argue that over time, that turning off and basically saying, I'm not going to listen to my nervous system could cause health problems. I don't think it's a get out of jail free card. I don't think it's actually the super healthy way to be, although it may be really good for diplomacy and for getting where you want to go in the world and in a more external way and a professional way. I will not argue that can't be helpful. But I would also say that most people, whether they're neurodivergent or not neurodivergent, would benefit from listening to their body sensations and actually acting upon what their body is telling them. It goes back to the story I told in the beginning that my friend said, I've made a decision, but it's not feeling right in my body. I can't explain it. I don't have the story to explain it, but I think I should listen to it. And I said, yes, you should definitely listen to it 100%. And we don't even need to know why. Again, you might worry that, oh my God, did I miss this opportunity because I listened to my body? And what if it was just a perceived threat and it wasn't a real threat? And what if it's just me having my complex trauma response? I don't care. I honestly don't care, because until we can help our nervous systems to feel safe, that is step one. You cannot override that with cognition and say, oh, well, I'm going to get ahead and get the connection and get the opportunity, and then I'll take care of my nervous system. No, that is not how it works. Step one is taking the 1 to 3 to 5 to 10 years to reprogram yourself from bottom up, to take care of yourself from bottom up processing. And yes, it may appear that during that time that you're reprogramming your body and your nervous system to recover from your trauma, to recover from intergenerational trauma that maybe came through your DNA and your cellular structure and the way that your cells function. It may seem like, wow, I'm taking too long. I'm going to get behind. I'm going to be 40 or 50 or 60 years old and miss out on my career. I'm going to argue that career that you're striving for, or that thing, that marriage, those kids, it was not going to turn out anyway, the way you thought, the way that you had this fantasy in your mind, the way I had a fantasy in my mind. It wasn't going to turn out to be that fantasy life, because our nervous systems can't handle pushing through, and they will rebel and they will shut down. You know, a very delicate example for me was that I really wanted to have children. And for whatever reason, it never happened. Tried for 17 years, never happened. All the tests came back fine. There was no problem in our bodies. I think it was my nervous system protecting and saying, I'm not healed enough to support another life yet. And unfortunately, ran out of time to make that happen in this life. And that involves a lot of acceptance. But when I listen to my students and look at my friends that also had a highly sensitive and delicate nervous system, that somehow they were able to get pregnant, whether that was natural means or through in vitro fertilization or IVI, you know, it doesn't matter how it happened. A lot of them with highly sensitive nervous systems are finding motherhood so challenging, not because they don't love their children with all their heart and they would never trade it in. They're willing to give away their own health and wellness and well-being for the sake of their children. And they are wonderful mothers. That's not the point. The point is, because the highly sensitive nervous system could not do any more than it was doing, usually the moms or the dads are the ones getting sick then. They're the ones who are having the autoimmune diseases come up. They're the ones that are having a lot of health problems. I think for many of them, they were willing to sacrifice themselves and their own nervous systems in order to create this for the child. And women have been doing this since the beginning of time. And we honor them for that. Thank goodness, because humanity can continue onward. And I would say, if you were someone like me that, for whatever reason, your nervous system said, nope, that is going to be too much for me. We can't do that, AIM. I invite you to reflect on if that is okay too, if that's nature's way of saying we need to go back and heal. And your life can be about healing, and it can be about using your life force in a variety of different ways to mother thousands of people. I always say, as a professor for 25 years, that I actually mothered over 20,000 students. I was the auntie that loved and cared and soothed and helped over 20,000 college kids get through their way in the world, and hopefully more as a yoga therapist and yoga teacher in addition to that. But just to say, there are many, many ways to be of service in the world. And sometimes our nervous system knows more than our cognition. Our nervous system knows that we need that extra time and space, and we need that bottom-up processing, and we need an hour to move in the morning to actually feel okay and keep the chronic pain away. And we need to have regular meal times, and we need to not pack our day too full and have a yoga nidra in the afternoon or a gentle floor asana practice or postures in the evening before bed. That for some of us, it feels like a full-time job to keep ourselves healthy and to work with our own nervous systems from the bottom up. So if there's one thing I really want you to take away from today and this kind of review of what we were talking about in the pod group with the Polyvagal Institute, it's the importance of bottom up processing and nourishing your body and moving your body on a regular basis and setting that up in your life so that when your nervous system is in freakout mode, it has a sustainable foundation to work with. It remembers what it feels like to be embodied. It remembers what it feels like to have cues of safety coming in and moving up to the brain to say, we're going to be okay. And we have a plan. This is another thing I talked about with the pod this morning. Like, what do you do when you get in sympathetic response? What do you do when you go into dorsal vagal and you completely shut down? Have a plan ahead of time, because you're not going to be able to think your way through that and figure out what to do in the moment. Have your vibration plate set up. When I feel this way, I stand on the vibration plate. Or when I feel this way, I hum, brahmhari breathing, and I feel the vibration in my chest. There's a variety of different things you can plan out ahead of time and have in place so that when your body goes into that mode, as it will and as it should, that you know what to do to bring yourself out of that shutdown response or even that strong sympathetic response. And so the cue of the day, the lesson of the day is, what are you going to do for your body? Not thinking your way through it, because thinking is offline for most of us in these situations. What are you going to do for your body? And that's not to say you can't also do like emotional freedom technique where you're doing the tapping and saying the mantra or the affirmation too. I guess what I'm saying is there probably needs to be some body component. It's not just brainwashing yourself or going to your therapist with top-down processing, thinking your way through it. There has to be a mobilizing, a use of different muscles, moving the cortisol through, bringing you back into your body on a regular basis every single day. It's not something you do when you get to that sympathetic response or shutdown response. It's something you have in your day. You do it every day, and you have a plan for when you get into those uncomfortable states. You have your, like, okay, I go stand on the vibration plate, or I go get a massage, or whatever it is that you can figure out for your life. Some people do like a foam roller. That works for some people to kind of convince their body it's safe. You're okay, honey. You're going to make it. You survived the latest threat. And again, doesn't matter if it's a perceived threat or a real threat. Your number one job, your number one priority is to make your body feel safe. And through that, you will have top-down processing. You will be able to think your way through it. So anyway, thank you for listening today. I wanted to share this with you. I think it's such profound work that we're doing in yoga and yoga therapy. And I want to give you words to express what I'm sure all of you felt when you came to the yoga practice and realized the transformational effects. This is probably what happened to each and every one of us when we went to that first yoga class and was like, whoa, what just happened? How come I feel so good? This is why you felt so good. You came into your nervous system from the bottom up. You became embodied in that first yoga practice. It told your mind you're safe. Everything went nice and calm. And you were like, whoa, I need more of this. Right? So I love that Stephen Porges and team have given us the scientific language to figure out what's happening. And that's not to say there isn't a lot of room for growth and research in this theory. It's very, very new. It's only a few decades old. And so our job going forward is to help with that research and to help flush out the bottom-up processing, the more biological way that our bodies have evolved over time to deal with real or perceived threats. All right, everybody. Well, I have been sitting here talking for far too long with lots of top-down processing, and even this podcast is a top-down strategy for you. I'm going to go move my body because I know that's how I can come back to a place of homeostasis, a place of safety, and a place where I feel more regulated. So have a great day, and we will talk soon. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to hearing how this podcast landed with you. And one last thing that I'll say is in 2025, we're going to switch up the podcast a little bit, and I want to hear stories of health and healing from regular people like you. You may be a yoga teacher. You may be a yoga therapist. I want to hear how you fell in love with yoga and what it did for you mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. I want a year-long podcast series of actual stories of health and healing and beyond. Spiritually, how did yoga transform you spiritually? So if you email me, amy@amywheeler.com, I would like to just hear a little paragraph about your story of healing and how that happened for you through yoga, yoga therapy, and or Ayurveda. And it's not that you can't have other techniques that help too, but the focus needs to be yoga, yoga therapy, or Ayurveda. And tell me your story. And, you know, if it looks like something that would fit into the podcast and maybe we haven't talked about too much, I would love to send you the link to schedule your personal podcast. So I look forward to hearing your stories all throughout 2025, and have a great day. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. After several years of beta testing, we are finally ready to build a community around a mobile app, the Optimal State app on Android Store and in the iPhone Store. On this app, we're going to start hosting classes, regular meditation circles, and really start to build a community of yoga teachers, yoga therapists, Ayurvedic practitioners, and healthcare practitioners that want to come together on a regular basis and have a community that is empathetic and compassionate and kind and full of goodness
that wants to grow spiritually together.
So come on over to the app. You can download it now, try it for a month for free, and we'll be having regular community online offerings through the app, and we would love to see you over there. All right, we'll see you soon.
A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening.
We'll see you next time.